A new report from Bloomberg Businessweek draws on interviews with dozens of people with inside knowledge of how Foxconn does business and the deal struck with the state of Wisconsin and local municipalities. That agreement could total over $4 billion in incentives if the goal of 13,000 jobs is met. But according to the Bloomberg report, the picture today is not very rosy, and there are serious doubts about whether Wisconsin's taxpayers and workers will come out ahead. Austin Carr covers technology for Bloomberg Businessweek. His new piece is titled Inside Wisconsin's Disastrous $4.5 billion Deal with Foxconn. Austin, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we've seen some back and forth whiplash news about Foxconn over the last week or so, and we can get into that. But a lot of the sources you talked to were skeptical from the beginning. Why was that?
You know, we've heard so much over this whole year or two from all these politicians and pundits about what this deal will mean for Wisconsin, but nobody has actually talked to any of the workers at the factory there, which we spent a lot of time doing, as you noted, just dozens and dozens of stories for the story, and the reviews thus far aren't good. People say at their early factory operations, the pay has been low, workers felt expendable, the company has been making an aggressive push towards more automation and robotics, which likely means many of the roles there will be obsolete. And a lot of our sources just indicated that the overall goals felt very amorphous and sort of ever-changing throughout this past year, particularly.
Right. And last week we had the story that, okay, this wasn't going to be so much manufacturing of screens as it was research and development, then a quick flip back to manufacturing. But you write that kind of question, that uncertainty has been there for months.
Yeah, I mean, that type of flip-flopping, I mean, really, it's been years at this point since the contract has been signed. I think it was November 2017, so more than a year. And just throughout that entire process, you know, first they were going to build what's called the Generation 10.5 factory, which is a pretty large-scale LCD glass factory. And then they, you know, reversed that and said they were going to actually build a smaller operation, a Generation 6 facility. This whole plant was originally about factory workers, and then special assistant to the company Louis Wu said in an interview in August of last year that actually it's going to be about 90% quote knowledge workers, which means more engineers, high-skilled workers, not sort of the blue-collar labor that this whole deal was pitched on initially.
Can you talk about why Wisconsin in the first place?
You know, a lot of the sources that we talked to they believe that this was really instrumental to the trade war. Foxconn is a company that is based in Taiwan, but a vast majority of its operations, its factory operations, are in mainland China. They face the risk of being caught up between the U.S., where a large amount of its customers are, from Apple to Amazon. If you own, you know, an iPhone, chances are they made a lot of the parts in that phone. So they risk being not only a target of President Trump, who has been very vocally critical of companies shipping jobs and factory jobs in particular overseas, but they also face the risk of suffering import tariffs, which could also very much worsen their already declining margins.
Talking to Austin Carr from Bloomberg Businessweek about his recent reporting on the Foxconn deal here in Wisconsin. Foxconn Chairman Terry Goh is a central part of this story. Here's what President Trump had to say about him at the groundbreaking last June.
And I want to be thanking Terry Goh, chairman of Foxconn and a friend of mine, one of the most successful businessmen in the world. Very few people even close. And I want to thank him for investing in Wisconsin and investing in the United States. And this is just the beginning. I know Terry, this is just the beginning.
Can you talk about Terry Goh, how he's approached deal making in other countries, states around the country and the world?
So Terry Goh is sort of infamously over the past four decades has really been a sharp-elbowed businessman. He is no doubt extraordinarily successful, as President Trump noted, but he's also been synonymous with some of that labor conditions violations. Some of the factory workers overseas in places like China are paid very low wages for the type of work they do. They're known for working all night to sort of deliver these parts for cheap products so they could be sold in the U.S. In addition to that, a lot of the sources describe this pattern where Terry is sort of known for going out in seeking large-scale subsidy deals to sort of underwrite his factory operations. He's done this again and again in places like Brazil, in Indonesia, in India, and even in Pennsylvania, where they sort of pledge these big high-profile deals. In the case of Brazil and India, it was billions of dollars in investments and tens, if not hundreds of thousands of jobs that they would promise to create. But a lot of these places, they never really live up to those promises. They never live up to those expectations. So a lot of critics of this deal feel like those should have been clear red flags as Wisconsin was sort of negotiating this deal over the course of 2017.
Yeah, in your reporting, you talk about what some decision makers said about whether they'd investigated those past deals with Pennsylvania, with other countries. What did you hear?
You know, it was really interesting because I was just almost surprised at how much they seemed to not so much be oblivious to them, but just almost ignore them or overlook them to a certain degree. When you talk to state officials involved, especially at the WEDC, that's the Wisconsin Economic Development Agency that's oversees this deal, you know, they just said, well, we got to know these folks so well, so that didn't seem like as much of an issue. We talked to the sort of chief negotiator from the Walker administration at the time, who just basically said, you know, Terry, he was a really nice guy. He seemed very genuine, a down-to-earth tycoon. And that person had also indicated that, look, you know, we were aware of these things going on in Brazil and India, but we just didn't feel like that would happen in the U.S. You know, for people who have worked at Foxconn over the year at an executive level, they just told us, you know what? I mean, you just got to be, you don't quite know what you're dealing with Foxconn, just because, again, Terry is very sharp-elbowed. He's willing to shut down things if they aren't going his way, and costs dictate everything for him, not sort of relationships with local Wisconsin officials.
In a statement, Foxconn said, no, nothing to worry about. We are still on track to eventually create these 13,000 jobs. They said your report relied on a lot of anonymous sources, not willing to put names on it. What are your thoughts about their response to your reporting?
I mean, that's interesting in part because a lot of, you know, there are sources who've worked at the factory that are on the record for the story. But it sort of speaks to the larger sort of opaque nature for how they've been responding to these types of inquiries. They declined multiple requests to us over the course of months to interview executives. We thoroughly fact checked the story with them in advance. There should have been no surprises in that story. In fact, we sent them 135 fact check inquiries and they flat out didn't respond to 66 of them or 48% of them. Their answers to many of our questions, which were pretty plain, were often extraordinarily opaque. Just to give you one example, we asked for the breakdown between Americans and international workers at their factory operations in Wisconsin, and because our sources told us that they were filling many positions with foreign personnel, despite the company's denials of doing so. And I have the response right here. They just said, Foxconn is a global company, and we are proud that some members of our talented global colleagues can assist in establishment of Wisconn Valley. When we asked further about that, they just didn't respond. So when they say, you know, we've tried to participate in the story in some way, that's the type of participation that they had. It was just sort of very vague, elusive, and misleading answers in many cases to our fact checking.
I want to go back to President Trump at that groundbreaking, the official groundbreaking ceremony last June in Mount Pleasant. He had this to say about how many jobs were going to be created.
So I'm thrilled to be here in the Badger State with the hardworking men and women of Foxconn working with you. Moments ago, we broke ground on a plant that will provide jobs for much more than 13,000 Wisconsin workers.
So that 13,000 number, Austin, has come up a lot. From the people you talked to who had worked there and were economists looking from the outside, was there a sense that we were going to get 13,000 jobs here?
No. From, I'd say, near universally, both sources inside Foxconn as well as outside economists just didn't really see this as a possibility. I mean, the economics didn't quite make sense for them to sort of set up this factory operation. Additionally, it's just really difficult to set up a supply chain. You know, a lot of Foxconn's supply chain network has been set up in Asia or, say, Mexico over the course of decades, and you can't just replicate that overnight. So this sort of romanticized notion that we were just going to bring factory jobs back to the U.S., back to the Rust Belt, well, I think, you know, it's definitely a sort of noble intention. It's just not easy as President Trump had made it seem at that groundbreaking ceremony. Just to give you, you know, a couple examples that we cite of this in the story, At the groundbreaking ceremony, President Trump talked about how this was all about that big push toward, quote, made in the USA. You want that stamp on the back of your products. But indeed, actually, the reality was, according to our sources, that a lot of the materials for the TVs, they were manufacturing LCD TVs at this factory. Those materials were actually being shipped in to Wisconsin from Mexico, from another Foxconn factory in Tijuana. And that's just one example of how, you know, there's some disparity between how President Trump described the facility versus what was actually going inside. And I'm happy to talk more about some of those conditions for the workers as well.
We're talking to Bloomberg Businessweek reporter Austin Carr about his new piece titled Inside Wisconsin's Disastrous $4.5 Billion Deal with Foxconn. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Were you a supporter of the Foxconn deal when it was struck? How confident are you that it will turn out as planned? Do you agree with the legislature limiting the new Evers administration and being able to try to renegotiate the deal? What are your thoughts, hopes, fears for the future of Foxconn and the subsidies involved? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Bloomberg Businessweek reporter Austin Carr about his reporting on the Foxconn deal and what's happened at the plant so far. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think the Foxconn deal was good, will be good for Wisconsin's economy, for workers in the state? How about for taxpayers? If you have concerns, what are you worried about? What do you want to see happen? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Austin, before we hear from our listeners, you had mentioned the conditions in the factories. What is happening in what's been built so far, and what are workers looking at there?
Mm-hmm. So they're actually still building out the campus itself, which is on 3,000 acres south of Milwaukee on Mount Pleasant. But slightly north of that campus is their experimental training center. It's sort of set up to prep their early workforce, do a lot of their hiring, and set up their early factory operations for LCD TVs. But workers that we have talked to that have worked there basically one of the bigger issues that they faced, in addition to the pay being very low, starting about $14 an hour, which, as a reminder, is far less than the $23 average that Foxconn had committed to publicly. These production workers were hired many of them as hourly temps or as interns, with sort of the vague promise of full-time jobs down the road that never, for one reason or another, seemed to materialize. And even when they did, the salary was disappointing. In some cases, they would just maybe get a raise of a quarter or 50 cents. Additionally, even they have a downtown Milwaukee headquarters, which they've set up their U.S. operations at, their U.S. headquarters for. And even workers there say that the pay wasn't very competitive, that they had different challenges recruiting different people because for some technical workers, Foxconn wanted them to train in Taiwan for up to a year, which sort of, again, goes against the very nature of this factory. This was about bringing jobs to Wisconsin, not shipping people to Taiwan. Just as a couple examples more, they didn't provide a lot of employees or some employees with their own computers or smartphones, despite this being one of the largest makers of laptops and iPhones in the world. Instead, workers had to bring their own personal computers or phones to work. Back to that point earlier, our sources indicate that they were bringing in foreign staff to fill a number of roles, both at their downtown Milwaukee headquarters and in their Mount Pleasant factory.
Let's bring on a caller now. John is with us in Madison. John, hi.
Hi, guys. I'm always wondering about the motivations of the people involved in situations like this. What strikes me is that you can clearly see the motivations of any politician involved, because they're looking for positive PR. For Walker, it's part of his reelection campaign to tout this deal. For Trump, it makes him look like he's bringing jobs back to America. So their motivations are transparent. What are the motivations of a man like Kerry Goh and Foxconn as a corporation to set up all these deals, not just the one in Wisconsin, but the one in Pennsylvania that fell through and other places around the world? Why do they go to the trouble if they have there's no big PR payback? They're not running for reelection. So what's the point of setting up a large deal like this that they never intend to go through with? Do they set it up thinking that maybe they'll go through with it, and they just never their plans change as they waffle through the situation? I mean, I don't really understand. I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks for the call, Austin.
I think that's a really fantastic question, John. What I would say to you is basically their obligation is solely to their shareholders, to their bottom line. That's the ultimate driver for a man like Terry Goh, for a company like Foxconn. So when they're setting up these deals, they are thinking longer term about what's going to benefit them with this sort of looming trade war, sort of some of the pressures that they were seeing between the U.S. and China, as well as from President Trump directly. There was a number of reasons to not just sort of insulate themselves from that, but also generate goodwill, with, not just with the president, but a number of top political leaders at the time, be they House Speaker Paul Ryan, who is a Wisconsinite, as well as then Chief of Staff Reince Priebus, another Wisconsinite, and sort of set up this large-scale subsidy deal that, if they decide to pursue, would actually be very beneficial for them, just because they would be getting a 17% wage subsidy and a 15% capital expenditure subsidy. So there's really good economics for them to pursue a deal like this. One of the economists we spoke to said that this deal was about 10x what analogous deals for states' incentive packages like this for corporations are. One executive that we talked to from Foxconn anonymously told us that, you know what, initially this was a pretty good plan from Foxconn's perspective, but as the economics sort of pressures ramped up during the course of 2018, there was a lot of softening demand for iPhone, which generates a significant portion of revenue for Foxconn, that the deal just started to sort of not make as much sense. That executive told us toward the end of 2018 that inside the company, there was executives were losing face in the project, and that they felt like this might end up being a quote nightmare for the company PR-wise.
Talking to Austin Carr from Bloomberg Business Week about the Foxconn deal here in Wisconsin. Back to your calls. Sharon is with us in Milwaukee. Sharon, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Personally, I never did think this was going to work the way everyone was talking. But my question is, how much is the state of Wisconsin going to be financially on the hook for when this thing all falls apart? Now, I understand they're not going, you know, a lot of it is based on credits once they meet certain employment numbers, but even if that doesn't, how much is Wisconsin still going to have to pay for this? And thank you very much for taking my call.
Sharon, thanks for the call. Austin, I know, as you were saying, a lot of the state subsidies are contingent on meeting job creation thresholds. Not all of it, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think another fantastic question from Sharon. Thank you so much for the call. Yeah, I think one of the bigger myths of this whole thing is that somehow just because this deal and the contract is tied to staggered hiring and capital expenditure credits, that this won't cost Wisconsin taxpayers anything. Basically, the deal is set up so that they will Foxconn receive tax credits to the tune of $3 to $4 or more billion, depending on what you're counting, in exchange for them investing $10 billion within the state and also hiring up as many as 13,000 people. While it's definitely true that the contract does require them to create the jobs and the investments first before they get those cash subsidies, the reality is taxpayers are already paying for this project in one way or the other. Just first point, there's been incalculable man hours that have already contributed to this product. Those are paid for by taxpayers. Anyone who's negotiated this deal, who is involved, the private jet that Governor Walker had to take to Japan to first meet Terry Goh and go on a factory tour, that's paid for by Wisconsin taxpayers. You know, as the local Racine County and Mount Pleasant have invested in this deal, they've invested at least $130 million of their funds, which could create their own debt obligations. Moody's has actually issued a cautionary note, just given how much debt they're taking on. The state more broadly has committed, reports differ, but estimates range up to $122 million for related road improvement projects. So there are just a number of ways that, you know, the taxpayers are paying for this thing. Ultimately, if it falls apart, there are protections and clawbacks for Wisconsin taxpayers, but that carries its own complications. This is a foreign corporation, and if you're really pinning this deal on potential litigation between the state of Wisconsin and Foxconn, if this deal goes really awry, I don't feel like that's a really good return on investment for the state. Even if the deal goes perfectly, I should also note that the Wisconsin Legislative Fiscal Bureau, which is a nonpartisan agency, the report that they had issued about this basically indicated that the state would not see a return on investment, again, if it goes perfectly, until about 2042. If it goes perfectly, the state could be making payments as high as $311 million per year to Foxconn in the decade ahead. So, those are just a couple of the ways that taxpayers will be paying for this. And I just want to be super clear. These are cash subsidies. This is effectively tantamount to them writing a check to the company if they actually fulfill their hiring and investment obligations. This is not sort of tax relief.
Austin, in our last minute or so, we saw some twists and turns last week. What is the next piece of the story you're watching for?
You know, what's really interesting is that at a certain point, we're just going to find out whether Foxconn is going to live up to their obligations. As a reminder, they actually missed their first year hiring obligations, depending on how you count them, anywhere from 30% to 82%. They were supposed to create as many as 1,040 jobs by the end of 2018, and they only created about 178. So we're just going to have to watch and monitor this, and really, hopefully the WDC really holds them to account. I talked to Governor Evers for the story. He said he's going to hold them accountable. But at a certain threshold, the company just has to live up to its promises. Otherwise, we're just going to find out that they're not actually hiring. They're not actually living up to their obligations, their commitments. And at that point, you know, a lot of the promises that the president has made about this deal, a lot of the promises that the company has made to the state, hopefully at that point, we'll just know the truth.
Austin, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Austin Carr covers technology for Bloomberg Business Week. He joined us to discuss his new piece headlined Inside Wisconsin's Disastrous $4.5 Billion Deal with Foxconn. You can keep the conversation going on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Share your thoughts, hopes, and fears about the deal. Coming up Monday on Central Time, we'll hear about a year-long effort to track people who are living without health care coverage in the United States. The author of the series, Risking It, joins the show. We'll check out some of the most intriguing stories in the worlds of science and technology, and NPR White House reporter Aisha Roscoe will be in Wisconsin, and she'll join the show for a look at criminal justice reform at the national level. That and more coming up Monday here on Central Time.